CliffCentral.com.
Yay! Yay! Thank you. Thank you very much. The gods of Eskom. We have power this morning. I mean, it's the small things, you know, that make it worthwhile getting up and doing the show. It's like, well, we could actually do the show. That's a good start, right? That's superb. I mean, we take everything so much for granted. My brother, who doesn't live far from me, my brother doesn't care whether Eskom provide electricity or not. He has this whole system. He has an inverter and he has batteries and he has solar panels on his roof. And his electricity bill went from like 4,000 or 5,000 rand a month. In fact, I think it might have even been more than that. I'm just giving it a conservative number to like 900 rand a month. How's that?
Now, does he have an inverter?
Yes.
Or does he have an inverter and he's smug about it?
Oh, he's smug and he has an inverter.
Okay.
I'm glad
he is part of that category.
No, so I popped around there yesterday evening and I had a coffee with him and I was saying to him, yeah, you've got these solar panels up there. And he said, yeah. He goes, it'll all pay for itself within a year and a half.
That's it.
You know?
No, but that's not smug. That's not, stop. He's right. Like, there's a very fine line between smug and right. Is the people that are smug are the air fryer people.
Listen, it's too early in the morning for your sanctimoniousness.
Bulelo, you can be right and smug about your righteousness, okay? You can be.
Yes.
You know, we have a family group and there's one with my cousins and whatnot. So the other day we were all chatting over the weekend and complaining about load shedding. And then there was a smug cousin who has an inverter.
Yeah.
She, you know, that ability to video call an entire group.
Yeah.
While most of us in the group are complaining about being load shed, she video calls us to go, oh, yeah, guys. Yeah. I have no battery. Sorry, man. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're fine here. Just shut up.
Oh, no. That's insufferable for the people who do not have them. But I'll tell you what. I think it's time. It's time for me to get there as well so I can be smug too. He says he doesn't even know when load shedding happens. He says he's totally in the dark about load shedding, if you'll pardon that rather unwieldy pun. He says it's fantastic because the only reason he knows is because he hears other people have their generators go on. That's how he knows. Isn't that great? So I reckon it's something we've got to do because if I'm going to be doing the show from here, then I might as well. And that, you know, it's something that the company can pay for and we won't have to pay tax on. So I see that as a plus as well. Why the hell not?
Also, it's a loophole.
Like you always saying, you think less government is. We must stop acting surprised that we're run by buffoons. Like I can't handle people that act surprised when they're dealing with incompetent people and things go wrong. It's like, no, we know our guys are incompetent. If you can afford it, you should have an inverter at your house. Surely, Gareth, a man of your ilk should have an inverter by 2 years.
What do you mean, a man of my ilk? I'm not special.
Yeah, but you always say you don't want government, is what I'm saying. And this is the one thing.
No. That's why I think it's also a good idea. It makes my position with regard to these things and government, it makes it that much more tenable because I'm not just saying these things, I'm doing these things. Listen, I think we've all got to find ways of being completely independent of them because they're completely useless. Like I got this this WhatsApp yesterday from, it wasn't a WhatsApp, it was an SMS from government. Government.
Wow.
You know how they send...
Why do they have your number?
I don't know, but I think they've got everyone's number. We're all on a database and they send it. So it says, South Africa is, and it says from SA government, South Africa is experiencing the resurgence of the COVID-19, which necessitates immediate behavioral change from all citizens. So I replied. I went, well, maybe if you can stop forcing more of us into fewer places, supply adequate electricity, pay poor people social grants and stop fucking up everything you touch, then maybe you could start to ask us to change our behavior. How about that?
Yep.
Catch me outside.
I said, and sure. one other thing. Stop fucking stealing.
Is your response probably going to some automated system that won't see the light of day? Yes, but does it make you feel better? Yes.
It really saddens me that no one in government's going to be reading that. But I feel good about it. So I'm like, yes, I got to reply to those assholes. I shake my fist to the heavens. Mm. Anyway, Annette says she's also smug and she has an inverter. And she only knows it's load shedding when her water feature stops running.
That's awesome.
Let them eat That's cake.
But I actually stand. I love that. I love that.
Oh, that's
that.
Nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I picture you saying that, Annette, while clutching your pearls. Just, my water feature. It's not working. So,
look, apparently, here's the really good thing is like once you, if you've got enough solar panels on your roof, and I get a huge amount of sun where I am. So my brother reckons if I had to do it, I'd probably need half the panels that he has because he's got a lot more trees around him. And therefore, you need less panels to generate the same amount of electricity. And he's also uses more electricity. You know, you can run one of your geysers off of it, for example, and then you almost don't pay any electricity at all. It just would give me such joy to not have to care about Eskom. And I don't have huge power needs here. I live on my own. So I'm not running three geysers and everything else all at once. So I reckon I could do this. Plus, the only thing I need for the show, and this is why I don't need a big system at all, I just need the internet. So I need my router to run. I need this mixing desk next to me, which doesn't take a lot of power. And maybe the laptop to charge. And then we're good.
Yeah.
That's all I need. I don't need to worry about anything else. Because it's all
asking for a lot.
No. So, I mean, I could probably put in a system for like maybe 10, maybe a little bit more, which sounds like a lot of money, but that thing would pay for itself very quickly. So I think that could be very cool. But if I can bring down my electricity costs overall, because you know that's just going to keep going up and up and up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then surely you're going to talk to our man Brett about getting gas geysers. Because then, especially that you live by yourself. You
exactly
know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. With kids, it's a problem because they always hot water running. But you by yourself, mm-hmm. you only use that gas when you're showering. And plus, you don't cook. So you never wash your dishes.
I don't bath. I don't cook. I don't need hot water for any of that shit.
Yeah. No, cut them out. Yeah. You know, my old man used to say to me,
cut them
like,
out.
He cut them out. But my old man used to my old man used to say, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah. And that's absolutely right. Oh man, I see that this is a big story and Woody's just reminded me of it, that Facebook have delayed the acceptance of their T's and C's for WhatsApp until May because they want people to reconsider staying on for longer. And they've had to go back and change their terms and conditions because there's been such an exodus of people from their platform. Like tens, maybe even hundreds of millions of people have said, F you, WhatsApp, we're out of here. Right?
Awesome.
Yeah. So they're on their way. I think that's so great.
It's a great
thing. Yeah, the people have spoken.
The people have spoken. but it's great. Monopolies are terrible for not just in business, but they're terrible for society. Mm. We've seen what monopolies do to do the greatest evils. In our very recent history, people always go back to like biblical times. In our very recent history, we've seen how awful it is when only four or five people decide what I think.
Yeah.
So
I think if Lizard Mark Zuckerberg had the ability to sweat, he would be sweating right now.
Lizard.
But, you know, he can't. The scales don't produce.
Wow.
I just got a message from somebody who says, unless you spend like $100,000 for a solar system which reliably runs your house, then, you know, you're not going to be doing it properly. Look, that's also, that may be an option, but then you kind of, you realize that you'd be paying that off because you won't be paying Eskom. So if you bring your bill down to $900 like my brother did, then you're effectively saving, what is it, 5,000 rand a month or something. If that's the case, you know, multiply that. You've paid it off in, what, 2-3 years. So that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, no stress.
I mean, there's nothing worse than being irritated.
That's exactly right. So I want to get to that stage. That would be nice.
You know, 'cause, again, whenever load shedding comes about, people start to reminisce. And
reminisce.
I made note of
the good old days when we used to have electricity.
Mm-hmm. We have been dealing with load shedding for 13 years.
Mm.
That's 13 years of excuses and false promises and some
Goya double guess. And it all started with that that Alec Irwin guy. You know, we tend to blame the Zuma administration for everything. This was under Thabo Mbeki. And Alec Irwin was the Minister of Public Enterprises. And by then they had stolen Eskom blind. The ANC are just such thieves. They can't help themselves, hey? Yes, sis.
Politicians.
Yeah, but particularly, like, the ANC is an organized crime organization. That's what they are.
They're disorganized, organized crime.
Sorry, good point. They're disorganized, yeah. Because they're trying to be organized crime. They're like, you know, like Becky Taylor's hat. They're trying to look gangster, but they end up looking like a pimp.
They just don't.
So my thing has always been, listen, people are all reasonable. We have no problem. You're politicians. We know you're a bunch of liars and you do nothing for a living. That's fine. Don't steal all of the money, guys. Instead of 10 million, you steal 1 million at a time. And the lights must work, and grannies must have a house to have a live, you know, have a house to live in. You can't steal everything at the same time.
Well,
come
on. That's the difference between a clever thief and a stupid thief. A clever thief takes a little bit every week, you know, like your insurance company, they're clever thieves because they take a little bit from you every month. And you like, you don't really think about it too much until Joe Camino comes on. And then the stupid thief raids your whole bank account. And then you're like, okay, I've got to do something about this. Stupid.
All at once, all obviously, and that's how you get caught.
Yeah. Well, I reckon, listen, we've all got to make a plan. So whether you can afford it or you can't, the fact is if you want power in the future, you're relying on this government. As Bulelo says, cut them out. Because relying on them is going to hurt you long term. And we are looking at it getting worse and worse. I suddenly had a realization yesterday while we were sitting here at this exact time and we couldn't do the show properly because I didn't have power. And I was like, oof, things must be so bad. Things must have hit rock bottom and then kept on going down for us to not even be able to generate electricity on a Monday morning at like 5:30 a.m. Then you know you got problems.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, we got lots to talk about this morning. There's plenty to go. I've got some sad news for those of you who are huge Mbulelo fans. He has got so much to do with Cliff Central Sport and the way that's growing that he's going to be coming off the show soon, which means we've got a couple of episodes left with him. It doesn't mean he's going to disappear completely. I mean, he'll still be around, but he'll come in kind of like, you know, Ben or Damon or Michael Flax or any of those people come on from time to time when he's got a gap because he is focused completely on kicking this whole Cliff Central Sport into the stratosphere, and it looks like things are starting to come together there too. So if that really upsets and pisses you off, then by all means send rude and abusive emails to us and we'll read them in order to mock and ridicule Mbulelo. But that we have to be frank about this. He's got things to do, and he's going to be doing some amazing stuff there on Cliff Central Sports. So we're actually quite excited about it because it could mean all that stuff going to the next level, which is great. Beth
Conversely,
says,
yes? If you want to celebrate like Andrew, then you should also send the celebratory email.
Oh, did Andrew send – what did Andrew say?
No. Remember the sanctimony guy? I think it was last week.
Oh, yes. He doesn't like you. Yes.
So, Andrew, please send us your celebratory emails as well. You know, is often in life, we just want to hear the sweet
in fact,
stuff, right?
You know what could
I like to hear everything.
You know what could be fun is if you really are happy that Mbulelo's coming off the show, why don't you dance a little jig and record yourself dancing the jig and then send that to us and we can put it on the website.
Yeah.
I thought, wait a minute, where, what, why is Prince Andrew being dragged into this?
Oh, is Prince Andrew, he's not working at the moment, right? No one wants.
Yeah, I don't know.
No one wants him.
Yeah, because the last peep I heard from him or his people was that he wouldn't be attending Christmas with his with the Queen. And I think that's more than just COVID and social distancing. I think the Queen just didn't want him.
Because, of course, he's, you know, he's still reeling from that Epstein
nasty
stuff. That Epstein stuff. And the fact that he, I mean, listen, Andrew's been, like, we talk about landing your ass in the butt. He was the Queen's second son, so he never had to worry about actually taking over. And he got to fly around, and he got to pretend he was like a trade ambassador for a while, and he was apparently quite shit at that, but he spent fortunes of money doing it. And making friends and having parties and doing whatever he wanted and, you know, living rent-free in one of the palaces or lodges or cottages or whatever it was for the longest time. He really had a very exciting life, and he couldn't even keep that together. He had to go and be friends with Jeffrey Epstein. So he's really screwed it up. I wonder if he kicks himself at night. He's like, oh, I had it so good. Because now he has to go and find a way to earn money. But who's going to hire him? Like, who wants Andrew working for them, right?
What does his CV say?
Yeah, Queen's son.
That's it. Elizabeth is my mum.
Yeah, Elizabeth's my mum. I can fly helicopters.
Yeah, that's about it.
But I prefer to fly in helicopters because I don't like traffic.
But he's an expert ribbon cutter. Has years and years of handshaking.
Yes, occasional speech making. But really not very good at very many other things. So
yeah,
it's a bit of a disaster. All right. Well,
work at a printing shop.
Apparently, Sia's got some news for us on that Trump baby blimp. Remember the one that they had in London when Trump went to visit, and they were flying it around London because a whole lot of people thought this would so disaffect and upset Trump that he wouldn't be able to concentrate on meeting the Queen. Speaking of shaking hands. So what are they doing with that? What are they doing with that blimp?
Can you believe that they are putting it in a museum?
Okay.
This pettiness just will not stop, even with Trump leaving the office. So it will now be displayed in the Museum of London alongside some of the remains of the protest, some of the protests that happened, which involved Trump, and just they're making this Trump exhibition, essentially.
He's officially leaving office tomorrow, right? He's officially out and back to being a real estate mogul in New York tomorrow, and obviously an agitator on the outside. Now, what are all these people who've spent 4 years professionally and incessantly hating Trump, what are they going to do with their time now? Because, you know, his life is going to carry on. He's not going to stop being Donald Trump. So what are these millions of people, I know some of them by name, I know some of these people, we've had some of them on the show, who hate Donald Trump professionally. It's all they do all day is they're like, oh, there's Donald Trump. They get themselves into a state about Donald Trump. They scratch and they kick and they scream and, Donald Trump, he's the boogeyman of their lives. Now, what are they going to do when he's not there in the news every day? And he might still be around, but what are they going to do with their time?
There's plenty to whinge about. Plenty to whinge about.
They'll be doting on Biden's rescue dog.
Not even. I mean, there's also the body positive. There's, I mean, think of all the things people can whinge about and get. Listen, if Trump was the center of their lives, Garrett, there's so much now. There's so much BLM going on.
I don't think Sia is correct necessarily, because I don't think that just because they hated Donald Trump, they're going to love Joe Biden. Like, Joe Biden's not interesting enough for these people. What is important for them is that they can wake up in the morning filled with hatred for Donald Trump. And listen, he earned some of that hatred. He worked hard for it. He used to get up every morning and try to piss those people off, and it worked. But I do feel like they need to shift their anger. It's not, they can't convert that into love for Biden. They have to, because nobody cares about Joe Biden. He couldn't fill a gymnasium when he was on campaign. Remember? The guy didn't fill a single big room. So it's not as if when you hate Trump, you love Biden. That's an automatic thing. They've got to find someone else to hate now. So I'm sure they're going to have to look around a little bit more.
The fact that they're taking this blimp thing seriously, though, is quite ridiculous. Here's a statement behind this museum team. They say, "We hope the baby blimp's place in the museum will stand as a reminder of when London stood against Trump, but it will prompt those who see it to examine how they can continue the fight against the politics of hate."
Keyboard warriors, I'm so heartbroken for you that you guys haven't actually ever done anything in your lives. And going to a Donald Trump rally in London and shaking your fist at the blimp. That was such a contribution. You know, Nelson Mandela is turning in his grave right now going, despite all of my 27 years, I did not work as hard as those people in London.
This large inflatable was just a tiny part of a global movement, a movement that was led by the marginalized people whose Trump's politics most endangered.
You know, right now, Martin Luther King is busy turning in his grave, too. He's busy going, "You know, I thought that we worked hard, but we did nothing compared to the hard work of those people who ate a McDonald's burger and then went walking down into London to stand underneath the shadow of the blimp and stand against tyranny," which wasn't tyranny because he's out now.
Hey, it was Martin Luther King Day yesterday.
It was MLK Day. Gandhi is just, I just got an SMS from Gandhi here. He says, goodness gracious me, all of my pacifism, all of that serious protesting that I was nothing compared to those brave souls who stood underneath the blimp in London and brought attention to someone who really desperately needed attention, because that was the one thing he wasn't getting throughout his presidency. What a bunch of losers. Listen, if you can see
yourself, collecting the baby blimp, we can mark the wave of feeling that washed over the city that day and capture particular moments of resistance.
Yeah. Anyway, good for those people. I'm sure that they are thrilled that they've finally got something in a museum that they can say they were part of. They must really feel good about themselves, and they deserve it.
You know what's so ridiculous about that is you still pay your tax. You let the Queen live in Buckingham Palace for free. So if you want to talk about a symbol of repression that Trump was, you're being ridiculous. Up the road is a woman that's never worked. Her family have never worked a day in their lives, and you continue to uplift them, yet you want to complain about Trump. I mean, these people from Britain sometimes.
But even in the US.
Oh, you're right.
You didn't defeat him. You didn't defeat him by doing brave things and taking part in protest. All you did was wait for an election in which he was already unpopular, and you needed, a couple of thousand votes more than he got, and then suddenly he was gone. Like, that would be like going to fight a battle, but the battle never actually happens. And instead of getting cake, you get donuts. So everyone's a little upset about it, but then you turn around and go home. And you're like, there's no bravery or courage in that. Stop it. Just stop it.
There really isn't.
Actually all very, very sad. Now they're going to be celebrating Joe Biden and Kamala Harris tomorrow, but it's going to be really tough because it's almost like Tiananmen Square in Washington, D.C. because of what happened 2 weeks ago. So there's fencing up everywhere. There's a huge military presence. It's kind of like China. America has become China, and they're about to get their most left-wing government ever as well. They've got the marvelous Joe Biden, who doesn't know where the fuck he is. And then they've got Kamala Harris, who has the worst voice in the history of speaking. I include people who can't speak.
Hi, Joe. I'm Kamala. I'm your VP.
But then we have our first second gentleman.
Oh, yeah. So he's Kamala's husband, and this is the first time we have a second gentleman. Imagine what kind of cuckolding it takes for you to call yourself a second gentleman. I think I'd rather be called fuckface than be called the second gentleman. I'd rather have here's Kamala I seriously, I'd rather wait there in the wings and someone would go, here's the Vice President of the United States, Ms. Kamala Harris, and fuckface. I think I'd feel better about that.
No, because I'm a status whore, I would milk it. Would even milk being... You see, this is why... So Kamala has this niece who's also moving to D.C. now. And see... I would be like that niece.
You'd be climbing in with her and go and stay in the vice presidential mansion and all that stuff. Yeah, but you're a terrible example.
First niece.
You are a terrible example because you would take any kind of position and status to lord it over everyone else. Yeah, I think this is probably one of the most underwhelming entrances in the world. They're going to try and drum it up to be like a big deal. You know, people are already saying it's so historic because Joe is the oldest man to enter office. Like, that's something we should be celebrating. Here in Africa, we're like, oh, more old people in politics and power. And that Kamala is the first black female vice president. I mean, we've had black secretaries of state before. We've had – so this is just – it's a big – we had a black president. Do you remember? That was quite a big deal. Why would a black vice president, and she's not even black, she's from Southeast Asia mixed with a bit of Caribbean. I mean, if she was, I'm probably darker than she is, so I don't know. I am when I have a tan. Wow. Give me a chance. Wow. When I have a tan.
Do you think they should have just, you know, had the swearing in the Oval Office or some
they
other
just,
room in the
They
White
should
House.
Have said, you know what, like, if Joe couldn't even come out of the basement for his campaign to be president, shouldn't he just say, look, I'll stay in the basement, you can just swear me in from wherever?
But honestly, why didn't they zoom it? Or is it a matter of the optics? You know, for Americans, a lot of the power is you frame the narrative through optics. It's a performative thing, like you say. So, but just zoom it. It's purely performative. He can sign the thing. Let's move on, man.
It's ceremonial. It's totally ceremonial. So it's got no. It doesn't have any real function. It's like it's like when your friend the Queen hops in a carriage and goes to open the Houses of Parliament. You know, it's pure ceremony. But listen, there might be people who brave the cold. It's the middle of winter in America now. You'll remember when Trump was inaugurated, he claimed the biggest crowds. I had the biggest crowds, and they weren't the biggest crowds, but they certainly weren't the smallest ones. Joe Biden and Kamala will probably have the smallest ones, but you watch them spin it. They'll say, oh, it's because of the Capitol riots 2 weeks ago, and, you know, this is
– all right.
Can't judge Joe on the same standard as everyone else because he's demented.
But let's establish this now. Like, for me, Biden's as crap as Trump. They're all politicians. For me, you know my position. But now, can we please just get back to work? We're done now. Your Trump hate.
Work?
South Africa. No.
Some people have forgotten that they even have work because they're still waiting for the government to give them free money. What do you mean work?
Look, we both know people that are fully gainfully employed and spend their time on Facebook and whatever, spewing that vitriol. Like, please, guys, it's hard enough for people now. You've got what you want. Trump is gone. Not that it's going to make a difference to your life or politics. They're going to keep bullshitting all of us. Let's get on with it now. I don't want to hear about Trump anymore. We're done. He's gone. The boogeyman is gone.
Yeah,
you've
fair
got
enough.
What you want.
I would be relieved. I'd feel the same as you if that happened. So Desmond Tutu, who hasn't said a lot. What's that, Sia?
Oh, no. We can carry on.
No, I wanted to get to headlines. You know, Mbulelo's bored now with the Trump discussion, so we've got to move on. Desmond Tutu's plea...
He was bored with that conversation months ago.
His plea to South Africa is don't let COVID-19 continue to ravage our country. Vaccinate. So the Archbishop Emeritus and his foundation have thrown their weight behind the COVID-19 vaccine. Tutu, who's 89, has pledged to be vaccinated against COVID-19 as soon as it becomes available. the Desmond and Leah Tutu Legacy Foundation said in a statement on Monday. His announcement follows a flurry of disinformation and misinformation spread about the vaccines, which has swept across social media. I don't know how that's possible, that misinformation and disinformation is spreading as far as they say it is, because every time you say anything about COVID-19, a warning pops up on all the social media platforms. In fact, I'm so sick of it that I feel like, you know, when I'm joking about something, something pops up. Like, you can't even... This shows you that it's either humorless algorithms, which is kind of what algorithms are because they're machine processes, or it's humorless people who are controlling those algorithms, which is much more believable. But either way, I'm so sick of these notices popping up every time I joke about COVID-19 or the vaccine, saying, this could be... important information which you're making fun of, or whatever it is that it says. It's just so stupid. So how is it? Who are all these people who are so worried about disinformation and misinformation? Who are these people? And who the hell put them in a position where they have to remind all of us this is very serious, you're not allowed to joke about it?
You know how far it's gone?
How far?
Go ahead,
And who solely will see one post about COVID and go, yes, that's the truth, because they don't have any family, friends, the news, neighbors waiting in line, and they hear other perspectives. They just get that.
Great point. But it's gone so far on my running app, to your point. Yeah, it's like, so on Strava is the particular one I'm talking about, is on there, I posted one of my running posts and I said I made a quip about COVID. And it gives me a warning on my running app about it.
You see, this is just like, who are these people who feel that they need to make sure that they're shepherding us in the right direction? Like, there's this massive groundswell against the vaccine. And even if there was, who cares? So if people don't want to have the vaccine, then let them not have the vaccine.
Let them die.
Why? Yeah, I mean, and by the way, this is a good point someone makes about Desmond Tutu. Doesn't he have cancer? If so, he shouldn't be getting any treatment, any vaccines, assuming he's in treatment. So why is he speaking about this? Who said to him, we need you to say something? Who are these people behind the scenes who are telling us, you know, if anybody's going to start believing in conspiracies, it's because of this kind of shit. And be like, why are there...
He is a religious leader.
No, I'm not talking about... I don't think this came from him. He says he's going to take the vaccine, right? If his doctor was involved, the doctor would say to him, you shouldn't be taking the vaccine if you're getting cancer treatment. So someone prevailed upon him from a PR point of view. Maybe he doesn't even know what's going on because he's very old now. In which case, why is this foundation doing yeoman's work, telling everybody to get the vaccine because Desmond Tutu's going to get it? This is where people start to think there's a conspiracy, and they start going, maybe you should be a little bit skeptical about this COVID vaccine. Know what I mean?
I do.
Right.
Why do I care what Desmond Tutu has to say about a vaccine? Is he a doctor? Like, has he ever passed a biology exam?
Right.
Then I don't want to hear. Just shut the hell up.
And I also I don't want all these organizations telling me what I can and can't post, or that they have to attach a warning to every post in case someone misinterprets my humor to be disinformation. Please just piss off with your sanctimony. Apparently,
and I don't want to hear Angelina Jolie tell me either.
Yeah, like, thank you.
Can the celebrity stop as
go
well?
Go and put on your Maleficent horns and go and act in a Disney movie. And stop bothering me.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Higher Education Minister Bladen Zimande, here's another rocket scientist. He says applications for the National Student Aid Fund, that's NSFAS, will not reopen. Listen to this. He says students had ample time to submit their applications timeously before the deadline. The fund received over 750,000 applications for 2021, which is much, much higher than the 185,000 recorded for last year. Why do you think that is, Blade? Because people have lost their jobs. People have no more money. They're desperate. And if they want to go and study in order to get a degree so that they can get a job one day, they need to borrow money from the government. 750,000 applications for this year. Last year, they only had 185,000. If that doesn't give you an indication of how bad the economy is, I don't know. But of course, Blade doesn't know anything about that because he's proudly a socialist, you know. What do they call them? The Communist Party of South Africa, the SACP, those guys. This is why Blade is stuck with this. He says, we gave 4 months last year, 4 months for those who want to apply, to apply. We're now focusing on screening for purposes of allocating those who are successful. We cannot, unfortunately, reopen. Well, thank God for that, because you'd have another 750,000 people applying for NSFAS student aid. So let's see what happens. But there's Bladen Zimande showing you that he knows how numbers work. He doesn't really, but that's besides the point. Public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane is on a sabbatical because she needs some rest.
Yeah. This is my favorite story today.
Wait, rest from what? Because it's okay for rest. From what?
So let me tell you. No, let me tell you.
Life is so stressful.
She needs to take off from now until the end of March.
No ways.
Listen, in a statement on Monday, Mkhwebane's office said her reason for the surprise move was her to get some rest. The under fire Mkhwebane is facing 3 counts of perjury and is expected to appear in the North Gauteng High Court on Thursday. This after a charge was laid by Accountability Now director Paul Hoffman in 2019. Her impending court appearance was made public after a copy of the summons was leaked to the media. The perjury charge relates to the Constitutional Court judgment that found Mkhwebane was dishonest in her conduct in the Reserve Bank and ABSA investigation. She's also facing a parliamentary inquiry brought by the opposition, which may lead to her removal over a number of allegations and investigations, including the ABSA Reserve Bank matter, which she bungled. So basically, she's fucked up so badly that she now needs time to just get out of the public eye. That's
so
what it is.
That lady was right. She needs somebody to protect herself from herself. That's what Mkhwebane needs.
And actually, that's why she needs a break. It's just too much incompetence for her to do her job. She needs a break from the incompetence. She needs to switch off her own brain so that it can power down. You know how you reboot a computer when it's not behaving itself? That's what we're going to do with Busisiwe Mkhwebane. We're going to switch off her brain.
Do you know how tiring lying is?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
But
it's more than just she doesn't just need early tonight. She doesn't need a duvet day.
If you wanted to take a month and a half off because you were exhausted, what do you think any job, any business in the world would tell you a month and a half? I need a break from all this incompetence and all the corruption and all the exhausting court battles that I've got myself into. What do you think any boss, any business would tell you?
They'd probably say you can carry on resting and just not even come back to work.
Please just, just go away. But we're not going to pay you. Of course, she's going to be paid the whole way through. You know, that's great.
By us. I pay tax, by the way.
Yes. So there's another example of how you get bent over a barrel and taken for a fool by government and people like Busisiwe Mkhwebane. A father has been arrested for rushing to buy baby formula. Do you remember the story I told you about? It happened here near me. And he's going to sue the police, which is excellent. A father in Centurion who was arrested for rushing to a nearby hospital during curfew to buy formula milk for his newborn baby is planning to sue the South African police and the officers who detained him for unlawful arrest. Good. They're going to proceed with a civil claim against the relevant police officers, and we're filing a formal complaint at the police commissioner and other relevant authorities, said Nasleru's lawyer, Lily Rotenbach, during a media briefing held by AfriForum on Monday. You know, if there is ever an organization that confuses people in this country, it's AfriForum, because they do a tremendous amount of good. But because they're politically inconvenient, a lot of people don't like to take notice of them. So they've got involved in this too, as they do. They're a non-government organization that has some funds, and they put their money into looking after people's civil liberties, because it seems no one else is doing that. It's certainly the Human Rights Commission doesn't. Rotenbach would not say exactly what the claim entailed. She would only confirm, among others, it's an unlawful arrest civil suit. And she did not disclose how much they would be suing the police for. I hope it's a lot of money. Even though it comes from us, I hope it's a lot of money. And I hope those officers are held personally accountable too. I mean, so what happened was, the baby was born on January the 6th. I think I told you the story, but here it is in writing. Both the mother and the child were discharged from hospital on the 7th. When they were at home, the mother struggled to breastfeed the baby, and he rushed to the hospital to get formula. On his way back, he was stopped by the police. He was detained and apparently spent the night in the cell with others. So it. Harry Nell from AfriForum says it is. Not a mistake. It was deliberate, malicious, and must be likened to one of the arresting officers. To what one of the arresting officers said to Mr. Lowe, we will teach you a lesson.
Haibo.
Yeah, you see. So
that's taking it far.
Asked if he would accept an apology and whether it would be enough, he said, an apology will not serve the purpose. It can help. I can't see that it will make everything disappear. So here are the overmighty police being brought back down. Becky Taylor's thugs and goons who arrested a man for bringing formula for his baby. It's outrageous.
He's still being very nice and civil with it. I would have said, hell no.
Yeah, correct.
Hey, apology isn't right.
That is Gestapo language, though.
It is. We will teach you a lesson.
Mm-hmm. That is scary stuff, eh? Honestly, that is one of the most haunting things I've ever heard. When your own police mm-hmm. say to you as a citizen, we will teach you a lesson.
Yeah.
My God.
For what? For breaking a bullshit curfew. A bullshit curfew that is only made up because this flat-footed government don't know what to do about a virus. Anyway.
That's hectic.
U.S. President-elect Joe Biden's spokeswoman says the U.S. will maintain travel bans from the U.K., much of the EU, and Brazil, despite an order by President Trump to lift them. So remember when Donald Trump got into trouble for the Muslim ban, where he wouldn't let people in from those countries because they were security threat, because those are the countries that mostly send terrorists? And everybody was, you know, horrified, and it was because Trump's such a racist. Well, Joe Biden has decided he's going to enforce a travel ban despite Donald Trump ending the travel ban from those countries, from the EU, from the UK and Brazil. But they won't watch. There'll be no fuss about Biden being a terrible person for preventing travel from those countries. They said on Twitter that now was not the time to be easing travel measures. Mr. Biden is due to be inaugurated on Wednesday. The U.S. imposed the restrictions on Europe last March, and the Brazilian entry ban was put in place in May. So these have been in place for months and months and months now. On the advice of our medical team, the administration does not intend to lift these restrictions. In fact, we plan to strengthen public health measures around international travel. So look forward to more restrictions in and out of America, if that's what you are into. Welcome to the police state.
Hey, maybe Joe's so old that he remembers how hard they worked to get away from the UK. Why let them in now? Yeah. You know,
he fought against King George III. That's right.
Yeah, he thought we need our independence then. So,
right.
Yeah, he has.
I remember when George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and we took up arms. And we decided we were going to fight King George III in Britain. And that's Joe Biden, the oldest president ever. So exciting. I hope he makes it through the inauguration ceremony. I hope he doesn't say anything stupid, because he's done that every other time.
What he must do is get some African politician friends, because we know our guys, they'll
extra old
till they're 90. We don't play here.
Imagine if Joe has a nap halfway through his inauguration speech. He's like, I just need to have a short sleep. Anyway, it's very exciting. That's what's happening in America. You mentioned African countries, Bulelo. You know what it is? It's that day where we get to check in with our favorite African affairs commentator and editor and authoritative voice on Africa, JJ Cornish. We get to speak to him. It is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and we look at what's going on the African continent. JJ Cornish is here with us for Africanalysis. How are you, sir?
Bonjour to you. I'm immensely well. Any better, I'd have to tell the authorities.
Yeah, be careful you tell the authorities, because some of them are quite heavy-handed. You know, they take that that wellness away from you if you gave them half a chance. So, JJ, as usual, there's plenty to talk about on the continent. Where shall we start today? Tunisia?
Tunisia's good. You know, 10 years ago, the Arab Spring began. Now, the Arab Spring was sparked off, and this is a very sad pun, by fruit seller, Mohamed Bouazizi, being bullied by the authorities who kept confiscating his goods, which I've seen happen in Johannesburg, by the way.
Yeah, to illegal traders, vendors in the CBD.
Finally, he set himself ablaze. And that ended. The upshot from that was the revolution, effectively the Jasmine Revolution, that ended the reign of Ben Ali, Zine al-Abidine Ben Ali, who'd been in power since 1985. Ben Ali was a former interior minister of Habib Bourguiba, the first president of Tunisia, who'd been in there since 1957 when they got independence from France. And he grew very ill and actually lost his marbles. And finally, Ben Ali took over from him. In oppressive societies, if you want to know the tough guy, go to the interior minister, because, you know, he has his thumb on all those things. Mm. And a tough guy was Ben Ali when I first visited there. You know, it was a police state. Tunisia was very proud of it. At every major intersection on the highway, there was a policeman. Hmm. On every bus, there was a policeman. In every railway carriage, there was a policeman. Well, you know, Tunisia is this tiny little country of 11.5 million people sandwiched between Libya and Algeria. You know, you don't get a rougher neighborhood than that.
Sure.
So when you'd say to a Tunisian, hey, you know, you're living in a police state, they'd say, so tell me about it. You know, where would you want us to live?
Hmm.
And, you know, he tried to be quite a secular state, but he cracked down on his opposition, no doubt about it. Tunisia was the country that Nelson Mandela visited shortly after being freed. And Mohammed Ben Abdelaziz Ben Aziz Billy said, okay, this is it. Tunisia, the very north of the continent. South Africa, very south of the continent. This is how we're going to have it. We're going to have the two. This, there will be a bridge across the continent, and we're going to have great links between the two of us, trade links, that sort of thing. Well, when a dictator says that, then it should happen, shouldn't it? Except the South Africans have looked interesting, but, you know. Not that. No. And I remember the ambassador, the first Tunisian ambassador was a guy called Hatem Atala. What a remarkably nice man. He went on to become ambassador in Washington, London. Fabulous career, of course, until the fall of Ben Ali. And I suppose he was never a very rough guy. I suppose he was tainted by being associated with Ben Ali. He's now an academic. But I remember him coming to me in a bit of a sweat saying, you know, Ben Ali has said we've got to have trade ties and we've got to have this and that, and South African businessmen are just not responding adequately enough, you know. So I'm in trouble. It was quite tough for him.
But, tell me, JJ, when we compare the regime of Ben Ali, and you had firsthand view of that when you were there, and you were also there for the 2019 elections, I think. How do we compare that with what we've got now?
Well, I mean, the Tunisia actually won a Nobel Prize for the kind of reconciliation that they brought up. And their revolution, the Arab Spring, which in fact was a bit of a jihadi winter in other parts of the world, in Syria, in even in Iraq, in Egypt even, you know, it did not bring the peace that it did, for example, to Tunisia. Now, Tunisia, when you look at it, they're very interesting people, Gareth. You know, they punch above their weight diplomatically. They have a very interesting identity. Are you an Arab country? Yep, we're Arab. Are you African? Certainly, we are the most African country you could ever hope to meet. And what about, well, we're Mediterranean too. So, you know, so they've got this triple identity, and they write, I mean, they are within sight of Europe. When you go to Sidi Bou Said or Carthage, you can actually see Italy from there on a clear day. So this is a country that brings in tourists, and they do it at a reasonable price. They're not hugely overpriced. So budget tourists from Europe go there, and it's very, very beautiful. A city like Sidi Bou Said near Tunis is painted in white and that Mediterranean blue. All the houses are the same color. Absolutely beautiful. Many many people have villas. Many Europeans had villas there and so on.
And of course, it's got this extraordinarily rich history because Carthage was the ancient kingdom that used to challenge Rome, 2,000 odd years ago.
Yes, indeed. And so they have this incredible Roman history. And the ruins of Carthage, part of the things you've got to see when you get there, the marketplaces, and it's just amazing. The food, the cuisine is really outstanding. And they also built up an industry of health tourism, because of the wonderful climate around Monsep and places like that, Monastir at least. They have health tourism, and they've built sanatoria and clinics for people, but they rely completely on tourism. It's a bedrock of their economy.
So
now in 2015, they had two terror attacks that completely decimated the tourism industry, and that nearly did for Tunisia.
So what's their current system of government, and is it as effective, as authoritarian as what they've been used to in the past, and do the average Tunisians manage to eke out a living that's better than what they had back in those days before the Arab Spring, or has it been a bit of a downward slide?
The world economic crisis really didn't help them at all. Mm. Survived this attack on a museum in Tunis itself, and then the terrible attack on the aquatic center, the maritime center, and they started getting tourists back again, and they grew up to 8 million. So that industry began or resurged, as it were. Mm-hmm. However, they have with the COVID crisis. Their economy shrank more than 7% last year, and they have a very high unemployment, hugely high unemployment among the youth, the most dangerous, of course, among the educated and among women. Gareth, I was observed these elections at a town called Gabes, which is south, not terribly far from the Libyan border. And it's a part of the country that, still, the Europe airlines cut off Tunisia because of following the terrorism. And to this day, there's the travel advisory against going to the south near the Libyan border and to the west. But I was in Gabes, and I went to speak to people. I wanted to speak to some youth about their voting. So they said, go to this coffee bar. And I went along, and they're very big cafe people. They love drinking coffee. Coffee and chatting, and the Mediterranean makeup comes to the fore there. And there I met these young people, and they were chatting not about voting, but about getting on a boat to go to Europe.
Hmm.
And I said, it's quite a long way from here, the south of Tunisia, and it's dangerous. I mean, you see the number of people who are dying doing this. Is this what you want to do? Many of your university graduates, you've got good futures here in a country that, its democracy has been underpinned. I mean, the new president, Kais Saied, was not from the political establishment, the authoritarian political establishment. Things are looking up for you. And they said, there's nothing for us here. There's nothing except unemployment and misery. And they were getting on a boat. They were organizing. This was the place where the people traffickers met the people they were going to traffic. And they were getting on boats to go to Europe. And, while I was there, 11 people died in a boat that sank off the coast of Tunisia. So there's that sadness about it. But the country is no doubt on the mend. It should rebound. But right now, the people are on the streets again. They didn't celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Jasmine Revolution because of the COVID lockdown. But once again, people are on the streets, young people blocking roads in several centers. And why is that? Well, because the authorities or the police.
Hmm.
And, when you get into North Africa and the Arab world, you don't play games with the police.
No.
These are not people that let you take over the capital, as they do with our friends across the Atlantic. And there was a shepherd whose flock had come too close to a government building, and there's footage of the police actually bullying him and punching him and so on. Well, the people said, What do you think happened 10 years ago? You know, there was a revolution because of your behavior. And look at this. And so they are on the streets right now. The repression of them, the crackdown on them is a lot more measured. The authorities are a lot more careful. But it's terribly interesting to see the way they're handling it. Mm. You know, they obviously it's disruptive to life. And again, order is very important in these societies, but the authorities dare not crack down too hard.
Well, that's amazing. Here we are exactly, you know, 10 years later, and some of the same problems are still raising their ugly heads, despite the fact that we supposedly had this incredible revolution. Now, JJ, I have a friend who's just got back from Zanzibar, and apparently in Zanzibar, they do not care a damn about COVID. They say we don't have COVID at all. Nobody wears masks, despite the fact that in the airport, this friend of mine said people were packed like sardines, and apparently lots and lots of Russians who are going in there for holidays, because as soon as you get a vaccine in Russia from them, their own vaccine, they give you a half-priced holiday. And one of the most popular places in the world for them to go is to Zanzibar, because there are no rules there. So I thought that was an interesting thing to remark on.
The birthplace of Freddie Mercury. Yeah?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So interesting. Zanzibar, I was there, was it the year before last?
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful, beautiful country. Go running in the evening and suddenly you see this figure coming at you. Tall, tall figure draped in those red and white robes or a cloth. A lot of Watusi,
yes.
Working in Zanzibar, working as security people. Yes, certainly it has a fantastic potential. But the plastic pollution and the dirt on the beaches and so on is a bit depressing. But the sights, again, the cuisine, are fantastic. As for COVID, or the scare, you know, I think there'd be people come to parts of South Africa and say, well, you know, they don't seem to care as much as they should. I know that, if you go into some of the townships, for example, people are not as careful as they should be. And they have ideas that if you take a glass of hot water in the morning and a glass of hot milk in the evening, you'll have killed the virus.
You'll be fine. Yeah.
You know, there is.
Yeah, I mean, Brand.
And it's all about, sadly, I'm hearing more and more and more of people going down here.
Well, I mean, Brandon makes the point, which is the same point that these friends of mine made when they got back. Apparently, when you land at the airport, they actually get angry with you if you have a mask on, because they say, why are you're being rude to us. We don't have COVID here. You don't need that. You take that off. So it's very different.
Well, that is a very silly approach. I mean, you know, remember early in the pandemic, we were told there was a general belief in Africa that COVID was a bit of a white man's disease. And the fact is, Africa has been lighter, hit far, far, far lighter than anywhere else in the world. But the fact is, too, did you know that 30 million doses of vaccine have now been dispensed or put into people's arms in the rich countries? How many in the poorer countries? 29.
Sure, is that
it? Not 29 million, Gary.
29 total.
Doses. You know, so that's the sad thing. Tedros Ghebreyesus, the World Health Organization General Secretary, is saying that we're suffering, or we're about to suffer, a major crisis of morality as the rich countries grab as much as they can. And, you know, when you speak to them, I had lunch with the Finnish ambassador the other day, who was saying, well, why do you think we would do that? Why would we take more vaccine than we actually need? And I think in countries like Finland, that may be true. They're taking just enough, but the doses are not getting through to the poorer countries, and not only the poorer countries, but countries like South Africa. Do you know when we're going to get a vaccine? I don't think many
I love the way Dr. Tedros from the WHO has suddenly developed himself a conscience when he didn't have any problem taking Chinese money for a program that didn't do terribly much good for the people of Ethiopia when he was there as their health secretary. I mean, this is also the guy who's more than happy to lie on behalf of China at the drop of a hat, but now he has a problem with the rich countries of the world. Maybe the WHO should do their best to try and be a little more impartial and not bite the hand that feeds them in the case of those countries that are developing vaccines. But that's just my opinion. What the hell do I know?
Well, I mean, certainly Tedros is correct in saying that there is a crisis of morality, that the vaccine is not getting to the poorer countries. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I'm not really prepared to be lectured by someone who's in hock to China for his job, and there's no doubt about that either. That's absolutely right. We know who got him elected to the top of the WHO. Anyway, thanks, JJ. We will chat to you in 2 weeks' time. As always, fascinating stuff about Tunisia, a country which I think too many of us know too little about. And thanks to you this morning, we have a much better and clearer and more contextual appreciation for the role that Tunisia plays on the continent. As you say, they punch well above their weight. And for the changes that have been made there in the last 10 years since that very iconic Arab Spring, which we all remember as being the first ever social media revolution in the world.
Absolutely. My best advice is get to Tunis soon as COVID allows you to.
Excellent. And you said it's also well-priced and that they have interesting people there that we should all be talking to find out exactly what's happening in the north of this continent. The far north, as in we're in this far south. Thank you so much, JJ.
Even South Africans can afford Tunisia.
That's important. We'll take it. Thank you very much. JJ Cornish, everybody. And this is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. You can find out more about them by going to cliffcentral.com. All the information is on our website, and you can be a part of the incredible stuff that they do across the continent. One of the reasons that we talk to JJ is because he fills us in on the continent the way that the Joburg Business School wants us to be informed about what's going on here, because there are enormous opportunities for business, and smart people everywhere are looking at how to exploit those opportunities, not only to make some serious money, but also to get their products and to get their services deep into the continent where there are enormous markets of people who want them. So let's get cracking on that front. It is just after 7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com.
Cliffcentral.com.